You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and John Nichols, resident of Madison, Wisconsin, and Washington reporter for The Nation magazine, thenation.com, on the line with us. Hey, John, great to have you back.
Tom, it's wonderful to be on with you.
So here we have the third governor in American history to face a recall election, to paraphrase or actually quote you from this great piece published in The Nation on today, Wisconsin recall FAQ, or FAQ. How's it going?
It's amazing, Tom. I wish you were here. And I'll start out by thanking you for stepping up for your old home state of Michigan and speaking up in many of the same ways we have about Wisconsin. I think, you know, the Wisconsin fight is really emblematic of what's going on all over this country. But here in Wisconsin, people have been given the first chance to turn back somebody who was elected in that 2010 Republican Tea Party wave. They've got Scott Walker on the ballot. And I cannot emphasize to you, Tom, the turnout is beyond comprehension. The City Election Commission in Milwaukee at midday, about 2 hours ago, called out all of the reserve poll workers because they have such an overwhelming number of new voters coming, mostly young people, to register to vote in African-American neighborhoods.
Wait, do you have same-day voter registration in Wisconsin?
Same-day, no ID. We are a democracy in Wisconsin.
And, good on you.
And in Madison, the city clerk just announced about 20 minutes ago that if the pattern holds from turnout so far, Madison's turnout could go as high as 88%.
Wow. Now, you know, I read this piece on Think Progress, on the Center for American Progress's blog yesterday, that said that many students won't be able to vote because the residency requirement was changed to 28 days last year in legislation in Wisconsin.
That is true.
And if you were living, and the colleges, the major universities in the state got out, graduated 21 days ago and 14 days ago or 17 days ago, respectively.
Yep.
And so people can't, you know, legally claim that even though they're now back living at their wherever they lived or living with their parents or whatever, they can't, you know, they don't have an address to claim. How does that reconcile with same day voting or same day registration?
It's a terrible situation because you do have a 28-day residency. So it is look, there is simply no question that Governor Walker and his allies in the legislature made a major push to disenfranchise students. It isn't just what you're talking about there. They delayed the election process by threatening to challenge the petitions for 3 weeks. Those 3 weeks delayed it until after the students had gone home. You know, the timeline?
Right.
So there's no question the governor has been a militant activist on behalf of disenfranchising students. But one very significant thing is that at the University of Wisconsin, a massive effort was done to organize absentee ballots. And significant work was done there. Also, if a student, and this is really kind of for people who actually, students who might be listening, if you maintained your residence at your parents' home, if you didn't shift your residence to wherever you went to school, then you can continue to vote at your parents' home because you've maintained
right.
your residence there. So what I can tell you is Scott Walker and his folks, they tried everything to disenfranchise. They tried to get rid, there have been proposals to get rid of same-day registration. They passed one of the most draconian voter ID laws in the country, but it was thrown out as unconstitutional. And so it's been a running battle. But the truth of the matter is that I would recommend, certainly to any Wisconsinite who might be listening, and I know you've got a lot of listeners in Wisconsin, go to the polls.
Yeah.
The inclination of Wisconsin is to try and get you to vote, despite all of the worst efforts of this governor and some of his allies. And people are doing it. I cannot emphasize, Tom. This morning I drove, past a municipal building in the town of Madison, which is a largely African American neighborhood on the south side of Madison. And they vote at the municipal building. usually in elections, I've driven by there many times, I haven't seen a big crowd. Today they had traffic wardens to deal with all of the cars and lines out into the parking lot.
Are there similar turnouts happening in the more rural and Republican parts of the state?
Sure they are. I want to emphasize, this is going to be an amazing turnout statewide. There will be a lot of Republicans who vote. We're hearing from Waukesha County, a real Republican bastion. Very, very high turnout. And that's to be expected, Tom, because in 2010 in Wisconsin, those areas had high turnout.
Right.
The reason Scott Walker is governor is not because, it was a universal low turnout. It was a low Democratic turnout. What's changing today, it appears, is a much higher Democratic turnout.
Do you think that the polls are showing this as a dead heat because the pollsters, by and large, don't have access to databases of cell phones, and by and large, most people under 30 don't have landlines?
It's very possible. I think it's an even deeper challenge with the Wisconsin recall. This is an unprecedented thing. We have never had an election in June in Wisconsin. We have never had a recall election for governor. We've never had an election come after a year of the kind of intensity that we've seen. So pollsters who try to poll using any traditional, data set are going to have a hard time.
Yeah.
And so that's just what I think. I think, I'm never a big fan of the poll anyway, but I do think that it was very hard to poll this one. What I can tell you is, as I've been around Madison today, and I've been in Madison. I was in Milwaukee yesterday and in Racine the day before around the state. But in Madison, and from what I hear around the state, the word I'm getting is that there is simply something unbelievable happening. It is unprecedented. The Dane County clerk, and that's the county clerk for the whole big county around Madison, that's the second largest county in the state, so often the highest voting area in the state, said that voting today is, quote-unquote, just wild. This is like nothing she's ever seen.
John, it seems to me that even if, God forbid, Tom Barrett loses this election and Scott Walker squeaks by, that something has started, not just in Wisconsin, not just statewide, but that Wisconsin was kind of the match to the kindling, and this, the progressive mobilization is not going to go away. Your thoughts on that?
I completely agree with you, Tom. There are three possibilities tonight in Wisconsin, all of them significant. One is that Scott Walker wins. If he wins, it's because he spent $27 million more than Tom Barrett did. And that's a painful reality, but it tells you money in politics matters.
Right.
If that reality comes to play, then we have to learn better how to deal with big money. I mean, you and I got to campaign harder to overturn Citizens United.
Right.
If there is a Tom Barrett win, then you're going to get an incredibly powerful message to our friends in Michigan who are trying to kick things up over there, to our friends in Florida and in Arizona and other states. You can do it. You can take on these incredibly powerful interests. It may not be easy, but it's definitely doable. And so that's a kickstart message out of Wisconsin. It's the one I certainly
And option for. Three?
But then, option three, and it's not beyond the realm of possibility. When I look at this massive turnout, I recall our last two massive turnout elections. That was 2000, aside from the Obama anomaly, I'll say, where he won very easily. That was the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections in Wisconsin. In 2000, Al Gore won Wisconsin by 5,000 votes out of 3 million. In 2004, John Kerry won by 12,000 out of 3 million. If we end up in a situation like that, Tom, I'm going to mention that other word that starts with R-E. It's not recall, it's recount.
Recount, yeah. Amazing. Okay, John Nichols with The Nation, thenation.com. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much, Tom. I'm so glad you've been on this story.
Thank you. Good talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back. 15 minutes past the hour. Is today the day the nation begins to turn? Or that we learn a bad lesson?
Hey, Governor Walker, if you had the skill to lead, you wouldn't push and shove the way a playground bully will. Hey, Governor Walker.
Hey, Governor Walker, today may be your last day, although 30 million bucks can buy a hell of a lot of friends. Christine Frizzell of RT USA is on the line, anchor and correspondent with RT America out of the D.C. Bureau. Only, Christine, you are today on the ground in Wisconsin.
I am, Tom. I'm here in Madison, Wisconsin, just a couple blocks away from the state capitol, which I should tell you has been surrounded pretty much for the last 48 hours with, you know, at times a few protesters and at times hundreds of people hoping to see Scott Walker lose his job.
Yeah, okay. We just heard from John Nichols, who said that there's just, you know, wild levels of voter turnout, both in the Democratic districts and the Republican districts. What have you been able to dig out in your investigative reporting there?
Well, Tom, I have been to three different polling places throughout the morning today. And I know very early this morning before we got there, some of the lines were so long. The poll workers I spoke to said, you know, they felt bad. They wanted to open the polls early because 60 or 70 people were waiting before 7 a.m., but they just couldn't do it.
Wow.
So we're seeing the same thing. I'm hearing as much as 65% voter turnout, which, you know, certainly in different parts of the country that I've lived in, that is unprecedented. Here in Wisconsin, it should be expected, especially given how big this election is.
Christine, has there been any serious discussion in the state about, you know, the story has gone national about these robocalls that people are getting, telling them either A, the election's on Wednesday, don't forget to vote tomorrow, they're getting these calls today, or B, if you signed a petition to recall Scott Walker, congratulations and good on you, and thank you for registering your vote against Scott Walker. No need to show up at the polls today.
I have only heard about the latter, the one you just mentioned, and I've asked voters specifically that question, and none of them have gotten it. I know the Barrett campaign has been going around saying that he, you know, Mayor Barrett has said that he has personally spoken to people. I haven't spoken to anyone who that has happened to specifically, but I know, you know, on the other, you know, the other part of the story here is that a lot of these voters are in some ways electioned out, so it can be confusing when you're a voter that votes in every election. There have been seven of them in the last 14 months. I can see why some of these voters might be confused, but you know, nobody that I have spoken to has gotten some of those robocalls.
Yeah. We had several people call into this program last week saying that they, from Wisconsin, saying that they had just gotten a text message that seemed like an anti-Barrett text message, and it said, call this number, you know, and when they called the number, it turned out to be the Barrett headquarters, and the Barrett headquarters was getting so many calls from this text message that had gone out, this malicious text message, that it basically shut down their phones for the day.
Wow.
You know, so we've verified that one. I mean, you know, there's some serious dirty tricks going on with regard to text messages and
robocalls.
Well,
I think that's really the bigger picture, Tom. I think that these people are so inundated with messages that the money being poured into this state, I mean, Wisconsin is just a dumping ground for money. And the money that's coming in is coming in for that purpose. It's coming in to control the message. And so you have, you know, between the phone banks and the signs and the emails and the texts, I think, certainly, I think it's safe to say that everyone here is going to be glad after today is over.
Yeah. Christine, as somebody who's not a resident of Wisconsin, I think you might have a little more objective perspective on how things are going or a sense of, you know, the gestalt of the time in the area. I'm curious. Barrett is being outspent 7-1 by Scott Walker, $30 million that Walker has versus $4 million that Barrett has. Does it feel like, does it look like, does it sound like, do you feel like you're in a state where there's a 7-1 difference in the intensity of the campaign levels?
I think yes, once you get out of Madison. As you know, Tom, Madison is a very liberal city. There's a lot of students here. And so when you're here and you drive around this area, you'd think that Barrett had it in the bag because everyone is wearing T-shirts and holding signs that say recall Walker, support Barrett. But as soon as you get out, and as you know, this is a big state, this is a very rural state, a lot of this, you know, the farm country here, everyone is supporting Walker. In terms of the money and what it's going towards, I think that's more easy to tell when you turn on the television or the radio. A lot of that money going to buy advertising, and certainly that is a lot more people, you know, calling Barrett a liar or you know, saying we stand with Scott Walker. He's making the tough choices he has to make. So that's where it's more apparent as far as the money. But they really do have a really organized on the ground organization. We've been to the Walker headquarters, and they just have so many people, you know, making those calls or distributing those signs. I think that too is where some of that money is going towards.
We're talking with Christine Frizzell, a news anchor with RT America, RT.com. And Christine, one of the oldest political tricks in the book is the day of the election, or so close to the election that nobody can do anything about it, basically. But typically the day of the election, to pull out the really nasty stuff, the stuff that you know takes a little more than a day to refute or respond to. Has there been a change in the kind of advertising that's being done or the kind of messaging that's being done on this very last day, on election day here today?
It's a good question, Tom. I haven't really seen, I guess I'll be really honest, some of the ads are all blurring together because they all sort of sound the same. Both sides saying they've been under attack,
okay.
Both sides calling the other a liar. I haven't heard that. I will say, you know, it's really interesting covering from the campaign events with the local news outlets. They are far more interested in this investigation, this John Doe investigation, and they're saying the rush has really been on the part of the Walker campaign to make sure that nothing comes out before today regarding all the details in that investigation, that they just want to get through today, and then they're hoping that voters and the people will forget that, you know, there's a criminal investigation going on surrounding
Walker. Right, that may end up pointing at Scott Walker, although he's denying it. Very interesting.
He is denying it. Yeah, they're asking about that David Schuster report, and he's
yep.
denying that he's going to be any part of that.
Yep. Christine, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good to speak with you, Tom.
Great talking with you. RT.com/USA. You can check it out. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
27 minutes past the hour. In your opinion, will money win in this next election cycle? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Charlie in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Charlie, what's on your mind today? Charlie? Sam in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Sam, what's on your mind today?
Oh, lots of stuff. Second-time caller. Honor. It's an honor, Mr. Hartman. I have a question. You say you were talking to John Nichols. You say there's same-day registration in Wisconsin without ID needed?
That's what John said, yeah.
Huh. So you don't even need a driver's license that says Wisconsin to register, huh?
Apparently not. That's how it's been in the United States in most states in this country for a long, long time. You got a problem with it, Sam?
No, I'm just wondering if I could, like, register at a buddy of mine's house just over the border.
Yeah. If you're willing to risk going to prison, Sam, if you're that stupid, yes, you could do that. And, you know, the fact of the matter, it's like you could also walk into traffic and get hit by a truck. Nobody's going to stop you. But, you know, you'd have to be, like, really, really stupid. People who register to vote as somebody other than themselves or illegally when they're not citizens go to jail. And generally, people don't do that. So conspiracy nuts and fools like you, Sam, you know, I'll just leave it there. I am so over it with these right-wing conspiracy asses, for lack of a better word. Richard in Queens, New York. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. Tom, earlier this morning, listening to Mark Riley on WWRL, he had a caller from New Jersey who said that he had a friend from Wisconsin who claimed that there were calls going to voters in Wisconsin saying, well, if you had voted in the recall and you were a Democrat, you had already voted in today's election.
Right, or so if you had signed the petition.
That was very funny.
Today actually is the recall. What the robocalls say is if you signed the petition to recall Scott Walker,
yes,
that counts as a vote, and you don't need to show up at the polls.
Yes, I thought that was very, quote, amusing, unquote.
Yeah.
But another reason I called was I've been hearing a lot about all the horrible things that Governor Walker has said about union members. I'm a retired educator in New York City. But I was wondering what's been going on with Governor Walker's plans to privatize all of the extensive government-financed and operated infrastructure in the state of Wisconsin. power plants, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. I, you know, frankly, Richard, I don't have the details on that. I'm sorry. Mike in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to call and discuss with you about the bottom line as to why the right-wing echo machine and the Republicans are so hostile to, you know, public unions. Their main argument, Tom, they tell me about how they get these outrageous pensions, they get these outrageous pay, and I told one of them, look, let me tell you something. The cause of deficits, both in the state and federal level, there are a millions of reasons. They have a millions of problems as to why we have debts. One of them is this, is we're giving too much tax cuts to the rich, okay? That's one of the problems. And then another problem is I'm hearing that judges, retired bureaucrats, get more of an outrageous pension than your proverbial public union
yeah.
member.
The bottom line is the pensions aren't wiping out anybody. It's this is part of this whole Republican let's pit, one class of working people against another class of working people. And, you know, this is a very, very methodical strategy. And they do it in a way that it almost sounds friendly, you know. Hey, you're working at Walmart and you're not getting a pension. And that teacher who's teaching your kid has a pension. Or the judge who's working down in the courthouse has an even better pension. Shouldn't you be angry? Even a more outrageous pension, to quote the caller who just called in? Nonsense. I mean, this is Republican spin. And the bottom line, you know, you say, I think I know where this came from. I can tell you where it came from. Corporate fat cats who don't want to pay decent wages. We should say in the United States that if you're not willing to pay people a decent wage, if people can't work at your place of business, have a career there, not just a job for a while, and retire with a decent retirement, you have no right doing business in this country. I mean, let's just say it like that, like Franklin Roosevelt said it. If you're not going to pay a decent wage, then go out of business. Make way for somebody else who will start a business in your industry who will. Because the reason why we give all these tax breaks to businesses, the reason that we allow them to deduct all the expenses associated with being a business, the reason why people like Mitt Romney, you know, who theoretically anyway facilitate businesses, although Mitt Romney, in fact, and you know, the whole pirate equity thing doesn't do that. They're actually just exploiting loopholes in the tax code. But the reason why, at least in theory, people like, you know, venture capitalists are taxed at only 15%. Is because, you know, somehow it's going to help society. It's going to be better for society. Well, you know, let's put your money where your mouth is. You're going to do something better for society. Society is mostly workers. So, you know, what the real crime, if you want to know where the debt's coming from, you know, the Republicans are all screaming about the debt. The debt is, very simply, if you take out the Bush tax cuts, if you take out the Medicare Part D that says that Medicare is providing prescription drugs to people, but it cannot negotiate prices like the Veterans Administration does. It has to pay, you know, $5 for an aspirin. It has to pay full retail. If you take that out, you take out the Bush tax cuts for the rich, and you take out the cost of Iraq and Afghanistan, you're back to Bill Clinton's balanced budget. It's the other thing you have to take out is the loss of revenue from the recession, from the banksters crashing our economy. You take out those five things, and you are back to Bill Clinton's balance. In fact, Bill Clinton's surplus budgets. So you want to know who's crashing the economy? You want to know who's responsible for the deficit? Talk to a Republican. Tony in Stafford, Virginia. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Hey. I'm calling about one of the main problems we have today is that we forgot what it's like to be not without unions. And, you know, we forgot about the people that struggle for unions.
I think one of the main problems that we have today is that there's an entire generation that has no idea of what it's like when there are unions. You have people now who are in their 20s and 30s who, you know, literally grew up with Reagan, and they have no experience of what it was like in the United States in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s when you had a strong middle class and average working people could spend 30, 40 years on the job, pay off their home, retire with a decent pension, put their kids through school, have a good life with a high school diploma or 2 years of college.
Yeah. Well, I'm from the Pennsylvania coal region, and up there you had to grow up and you heard
stories of people when they were working in the mines, they were injured. They had to wait for the end of the shift before they take them out.
Right.
And when the miners unionized, they had the iron and coal police, and there were people killed and injured real bad. Like I was looking at the American auto workers, and before Ford unionized, he had a special unit, projects unit, which was supposed to suppress the union effort.
Yep. Well, Pinkerton was started as a company that would go out and break heads of union guys. I mean, this was a major industry back in the late part of the 19th and early three decades of the 20th century. And you know, of course, Franklin Roosevelt put an end to it in 1935 with the Wagner Act. But that's what it was all about. Tony, excellent point. Thank you for calling and making it. Brett in White Lake, Wisconsin. Hey, Brett, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing today?
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
Well, first I'd like to thank you for your very enlightening news and commentary. It's been a great education.
Thank you.
Being from a rural area of Wisconsin here, I took a couple of trips today and yesterday and noticed all the huge Scott Walker signs all over the place. And within a good golf ball drive of me is an Indian reservation of First Nations Menominee people. And that's where the Scott Walker signs ended and the Barrett signs began. And it seems like they know what's going on.
Yeah.
As soon as I passed out of the reservation, then the Walker signs were there again. But one thing that really got my interest was a little email I got today. And there's a woman named Susan H. Finnell from Watertown. And she's been polling for people for about the last 8 weeks. Well, she said she spoke with a woman in another town here, Oconomowoc. Said she knows a couple that lives in a, you know, nice house in a well-traveled street. And the couple had never been particularly interested in politics. And she said that the woman that she spoke with said she didn't even know if they were regular voters. Well, one day a woman drove by her house and saw an enormous Stand with Walker sign in their yard. And she talked to the homeowner and commented on the sign, saying she was surprised to see that they were supporting Scott Walker. And the homeowner replied, "We don't support Scott Walker." The homeowner said that someone came to their door and asked to rent a spot in their yard for a sign and gave them $100. Yeah. So I'm wondering about some of these huge and very expensive-looking signs I'm seeing in people's yards.
Yeah. Oh, that's well. You got $30 million. You got to spend it someplace. Giving somebody $100 to rent a spot in their front yard is cheap.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
We have been just deluged with calls and some of the erroneous stuff that you had mentioned earlier in the program.
Have you gotten any of those calls, Brett?
Yes, we have gotten the robocalls that have with the kind of misleading information on them.
For example.
Well, the one that said that the voting was actually tomorrow, and that was a call that I picked up on my answering machine this morning after I got back from my errands.
Wow. Do you have that recorded by any chance?
Yeah, it's on there.
Oh, very interesting. I'm going to put you on hold, and Paul will talk to you. I'd love to get a copy of that recording. Hold on just a second, Brett.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
And talk with Paul. It's on line 6.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Back with more right after this.
This is a union town, a union town.
Speaking the truth to the multinational corporations, we'd really rather you didn't know all about. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. And Brenda in River Park, Wisconsin. Hey, Brenda, thanks for listening to AM 950. What's up? Brenda?
Oh, hi. No, Tom, it's Linda. How are you?
Oh, Linda, I'm sorry. I'm fine.
Yeah,
how are you?
No problem. Thanks for taking my call. So, listen, I live across the border in Minnesota, but I'm over here in western Wisconsin to get out the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to let you know that there are a ton of people in this area from 200-300 miles away in Minnesota come to Wisconsin to help get out the vote.
Oh, great.
The second thing I wanted to let you know is that if you could add to the context of the discussion that this isn't just about unions. This is about Scott Walker gutting education funding.
Yep.
It's about his preferential tax treatment for corporations. And it's also about question of his fitness for office.
Yeah, he gave a $2 billion tax cut to corporations and fat cats in Wisconsin and then took that $2 billion out of the hide of the teachers and the police.
That's right. That's right. So I hope the discussion, is not just about unions and public pensions.
Yeah, very well said. Thank you very much, Linda, and great to hear from you. And thank you for your activism. I honor that. Abby in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hey, Abby, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good to talk to you. I just had to respond to that caller a while ago that just sneered about how anybody can just go walk in and vote with early registration in Wisconsin.
Right.
The process isn't quite as simple as that. You have to have something with you that proves who you are and where you live, some sort of official document.
Yeah.
It could be like a light bill. It could be your lease. You know, something that's got your name and your physical street address on it that proves that you've lived there, what's now, I think, a 28-day requirement. It used to be just 10 days.
Right. That makes a lot more sense than just, you know, you can walk in and say, hi, here I am.
Yeah.
And every time I've ever registered to vote, and I've done so many times, I've moved around this country a lot over the last many years.
And the other thing with voter suppression laws, I mean, the way to really approach this is basically the voter suppression laws are trying to prevent a scenario where maybe 100 people vote that shouldn't be voting, but in the process of stopping these 100 people from voting, they're stopping tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of legitimate voters from voting.
Yeah, yeah.
So
actually, it looks like 5 million this year.
Voter fraud than what they're trying to prevent.
Right. It looks like so far it's like 5 million this year. I mean, that's the amazing thing, is all the people who are being thrown off the voting rolls all across the country. And they, you say to stop 100 people, they have yet to identify one guy.
Oh, yeah, I exaggerate in their favor.
I mean, one guy. They have not got the name of one guy. I mean, I'll tell them, you know, voter fraud Mitt Romney, but one guy. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Ed in Bayside, Wisconsin. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Well, I wanted to say a couple things. I'm canvassing right now, and the less time I spend on the phone with you, obviously, the more time I have for canvassing.
Great.
But I wanted to tell you several things. First, Tom Barrett is really a good guy. He's a totally clean politician, which is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
He was, he was a congressman for 10 years.
Yep.
He made a floor speech when the Clinton impeachment came up, and he was not supporting Clinton. You know, he told the truth that Clinton did some bad things.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't ridiculous to go after him. He was just very honest about it.
Yeah.
Also, if a vote for Walker is likely to be really a vote for Rebecca Clayfish, and she is off the wall. I don't know if you'll
She's the lieutenant governor?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was a former TV reporter. Her husband, Joel, also was a TV reporter. He was recently caught on film of double voting in the assembly, which is a felony.
Right.
He was voting for a number of assemblymen who wasn't there.
Oh, I remember that. So, yeah. But being a Republican, of course, he wouldn't be prosecuted for that.
Well, of course not, because the Attorney General is a Republican.
Right. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Amazing. Ed, excellent point. Thank you very much, and I'll let you get back to canvassing. Good luck and God bless.
Thank you very much for listening. Bye.
Thank you. Charlie in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Tom, we got connection now. I lost you there. You lost me, whichever.
Okay.
First-time caller. I'm a traditional Republican, and I'm one of those that are saying, go Tom Barrett, calling on all traditional Republicans to vote for Tom Barrett today.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see Tom Barrett win by 7 to 9%. I think with all this big money, it's going to blow up in the Republicans' face, and I'm hoping it's going to show that in the nation, too, come November.
Well, they're outspending him by $26 million, so which I mean, he has $4 million. Scott Walker has $30 million, and that doesn't count outside money that's coming in as well, which might be another $30 million for all we know. We won't know probably for months, but, so he's being outspent just in the raw numbers, 7-1. Tom Barrett is being outspent. So it seems like, 7-1 is like 13%. So if he gets 14% of the vote, we should all be impressed. I think it's going to be closer to...
The fringe has taken our party and totally own it. It's hard for us traditionals to take our party back. We need to take our party back. The likelihood of taking it back is pretty slim to none. What we really need to do is break away and start our own party.
You're talking about Republicans, traditional Republicans, Eisenhower Republicans.
That's right. That's correct. And just dump these idiots, these
Tea Partiers?
Especially them.
Yeah.
They're just destroying not just our party, but the country. And I'm just putting a call to all those traditional Republicans in Wisconsin to get out there and vote for Tom Barrett and say, we've had enough of the BS of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
It's just the label. It's not a Republican Party. So.
Well, and the crazies have driven off a lot of good people, from Richard Lugar to David Frum. I mean, there's a lot of folks who are standing on the outside of the Republican Party now. Is it Susan Collins or... Yeah, it's Olympia Snow has decided to retire. She's not, you know, the senator from Maine, the Republican senator from Maine. Barry Goldwater. I mean, I mentioned Dwight Eisenhower before, who famously wrote a letter to his brother in 1954 that if the crazies took over the Republican Party, we'd never hear from it again. But Barry Goldwater wouldn't know who these people are. Barry Goldwater, who famously said you don't have to be straight to shoot straight, you know, about gays in the military. It is incredible. Charlie, I wish you well in taking back the Republican Party. I absolutely do wish you well. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, today's the big day. Wisconsin is going to help us figure out, frankly, I think for the national election as well, whether outspending your opponent 7-1 in a race that is already fairly tight is a strategy that will push somebody over the top. If outspending, you know, if Scott Walker outspending Tom Barrett 7-1 in the state of Wisconsin pushes Scott Walker over the 50% mark, then we've got a big Citizens United problem here in the United States. Andy Kroll is a staff reporter with Mother Jones Magazine, motherjones.com, of course. And Andy, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
Great to have you with us. You're in Wisconsin right now.
I am in Milwaukee, where all the action is at.
Okay, we've had two reports so far from Madison. What's going on in Milwaukee?
Well, it's the Democrats are squeezing every last vote that they can out of this city. Milwaukee traditionally is a hub of Democratic support in elections, and Tom Barrett, in a race in which turnout is really going to be the big difference, and Democrats need, you know, as high a turnout as they can get. Milwaukee is big for them, and they need Milwaukee to get to the polls, you know, in huge numbers and near presidential turnout numbers if Barrett has a hope of beating Scott Walker today.
Right. The conventional wisdom that I'm hearing, actually I'm hearing two different things from the pundits. One is that if we see turnout in Wisconsin that resembles the 2008 election where Barack Obama swept the state, then Tom Barrett is the governor. If, on the other hand, we see turnout like the 2010 election where basically the Republicans showed up in about the same numbers that they did in 2008, but the Democrats just didn't show up, or progressives didn't show up, you know, in large numbers, then Scott Walker wins. That's one form of conventional wisdom that I'm hearing. The other is, you know, everybody's pointing to Intrade.com, which is the Irish betting site, mm-hmm. which is almost never wrong about elections. And they're saying right now you can buy bets on Barrett or Walker, and the odds that they're giving are 93.6% Walker to, what would that be, 5.4% for Barrett, or 6.4%, I guess. Those are pretty grim numbers, and I'm just wondering what you're hearing there in Wisconsin.
With the Intrade numbers, you know, I think those are a reflection of the fact that Scott Walker has not trailed in a poll all year, and mm-hmm. the Real Clear Politics polling average has him up by a little over 6 percentage points. Tom Barrett has not. I mean, the closest Tom Barrett has come is, you know, 2 or 3 percentage points, give or take a few. And, you know, it is a statistical dead heat.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, Intrade is reflecting essentially what the polling has been, what the public sentiment has been. You know, you've got to keep in mind as well that this is the third gubernatorial recall election in American history.
Right.
It is something without...
This is unprecedented, in other words.
It is almost unprecedented. And, you know, I think, you know, in terms of in-trade, you know, in some cases, all bets are off because this is such a... this is such an aberration here. Now, with the first piece of conventional wisdom that you mentioned, you know, interestingly, going into this recall election, the energy and the number of people, the percentage of people who say that they were absolutely going to go out and vote in this recall was actually a bit higher on the Republican side. Now, we're talking the difference between in the 90% range, you know, in the mid-80s or the low 80% range for Democrats, and it's the 90s for Republicans, is when I think when you hear people say Democrats need massive turnout if Barrett hopes to have a chance in this recall election, I think that's a reflection of those polls, which showed that, you know, the bit of room for growth is on the Democratic side. And, you know, and they're really, this race is really only about 2 to 4 percentage points. It's those undecided voters who, you know, are still scratching their heads going into today's elections. You know, they may make up their mind in the voting booth today. But the more of those people that you get out, the more independents, more undecided that you get out, you know, I think that bodes well for the Democrats. You know, I was just talking to some labor folks a few minutes ago, and, you know, obviously they're talking to a reporter, and so they're not going to say anything that's particularly damaging to their cause, but, you know, they're all optimism. The numbers that they're seeing coming in from around the state, not just Dane County, the sort of the liberal heart of Wisconsin or Milwaukee, but other places, you know, central Wisconsin, parts of northern Wisconsin, you know, they say they're seeing great numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, by no means are they hedging, are they managing expectations, or are they already starting to spin a potential loss? You know, they are very, very confident, as confident as I've heard them in the past few weeks.
Very interesting. Have there been any surprises in the last 24 hours? Has there been a change of strategy by either Barrett or Walker, anything like that?
No. They, you know, Walker, I was at a Walker event last night here in Milwaukee. Walker has stuck to his message, stuck to his talking points, you know, just in an incredibly disciplined way. Mm-hmm. He ends almost every line or almost every bit of stump speech that he has with, you know, some variation of, we're moving Wisconsin forward, we can't move Wisconsin backward, I'm taking Wisconsin forward. And that has been his message in the past month, if not more. Mm-hmm. He stuck to it, and Barrett has done the same. Barrett has said that Scott Walker started a civil war in this state. Barrett has said that Scott Walker lied to the people of Wisconsin with his attack on collective bargaining rights for public employee unions. Barrett, you know, he hit on the same kinds of themes that he has been for the past month. You know, really it was just sort of a buckling down. Now, you know, we have heard a few bits of news here and there, you know, a robocall going out telling people who signed petitions to recall Walker that they don't have to vote, which is obviously not true. So there's been some effort to counter that misinformation. But, you know, but the two candidates have stuck to their guns here. They have hammered away on the same themes, and now it's in the voters' hands.
What are the expectations for returns tonight? The polls close at, is it 8 o'clock local time, which would be 9 o'clock East Coast time?
Yep.
So is it expected that we'll know the results within 5 minutes, or is it expected that it's going to be like in some previous elections, you know, Waukesha County takes 3 hours to come in, or maybe a day and a half? You know, any sense of that?
Well, the official sort of forecasted turnout is 60 to 65% of voting age adults, which is really huge.
Mm-hmm.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's sort of voting reporter, elections reporter, you know, called that more, quote, more or less insane in how big it was. I don't think that this is going to be an election that we will know soon after the polls close. I think my gut tells me that this thing will go pretty well into the night. Both sides have lawyered up and gone through all the steps they need to take for a recount.
If it's tight,
If it's tight, right. If the final margin is within about a half a percentage point, an automatic state-funded recall is
recount,
triggered.
Right.
Recount
kicks in.
Yeah, recount is triggered.
Now, we've had people call into the program, Andy, one saying that the Walker campaign is offering $100 to put a sign in your yard, that they've been buying front yards. Another saying that he got a robocall today telling him not to forget to vote tomorrow, Wednesday. And he's sending us a clip of that. I wonder if these kind of things, well, it's going to take some time, I guess, for all the stories to get out. It's going to be really interesting. Andy Kroll with Mother Jones Magazine, motherjones.com, on the ground in Wisconsin. Andy, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And back with your thoughts and experiences on what's going on in Wisconsin and around the country, actually. There's also an election going on in California right now.
There's laughter, rich folks eating tables, all at the expense of labor. He's a weasel. He's not a badger, he's a weasel.
I think they're talking about Scott Walker. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And David Schuster, a correspondent with Current TV, Current.com, host of Take Action News, and also at We Act Radio here in Washington, D.C. on Saturdays. His program, WeActRadio.com, TakesActionNews.com. David, welcome to the program.
Tom, it's an honor to be with you. I love the Weasel song. Great stuff.
Thank you. You know, the last time we talked, I was on your show over on We Act Radio.
We were honored, absolutely.
That was a hoot.
Quite an outfit down there. Absolutely.
So it is. I understand you are in Wisconsin right now.
Yeah, I'm in Madison, and I'm just sort of keeping track of what's going on. Look, as everybody has suggested, huge turnout, at least in terms of anecdotally. Both Democrats and Republicans, though, both parties are saying that good turnout on their side, and they're fearful of the turnout on the other. So at least they're in agreement that this does seem to have a lot of enthusiasm across the board.
Now, you have made news in that you are being quoted by sides left, right, and center as saying that there is a criminal investigation that does or may have Scott Walker in its crosshairs. Scott Walker, one of the few times he went off message was apparently yesterday. Somebody asked him this bluntly, and in fact, clip number 9. Here's Scott Walker's. If you have that chain, okay. Here's Scott Walker's response, David.
Governor, can I ask you about the David Schuster report? I'm sure you saw kind of the storm he set off on Twitter last night, indicating that his sources are saying you are now a target of the John Doe investigation. Have you or your lawyers received a letter indicating you are a target of the investigation?
Absolutely not. 100% wrong. Could not be more wrong. There's just more of the liberal scare tactics out there, desperately trying to get the campaign off target from talking about what it was to begin with.
Which is quack, quack, quack. So, David Schuster, were you wrong?
No, I stand by the report 100%. And here's the fact of the matter. I mean, you know, people can judge Scott Walker's credibility themselves. I mean, he was the same guy who suggested that the reason he needed to bust the unions is because of the deficit problem in the state that was caused by others, even though, of course, he had given tax cuts to the wealthy. And then as far as the investigation is concerned, I mean, he said from the beginning when there were these allegations of corruption and embezzlement when he was Milwaukee County executive, he said, oh, yeah, I want this investigation. I want prosecutors to take a look. We're cooperating. Well, we find out through court documents released last week that the prosecutor filed a notice with the judge 2 years ago that, no, Scott Walker and his staff were stonewalling. And that's why this investigation had to go on the course that it did 2 years ago by going through this John Doe process, which I don't want to get into details, but essentially a process to enable people to testify in some secrecy because of sensitive political nature.
Well, you would think that when a variety of people who are surrounding Scott Walker have been given immunity in exchange for their testimony, that it's not because they intend to indict some homeless guy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, you know, you pointed out $160,000 that he's transferred from his campaign fund to a personal legal defense fund. Well, under Wisconsin law, you cannot do that unless you are the focus of an investigation or one of your agents is a focus. Well, in a rare moment of candor the other week, Scott Walker said, oh, no, that money is going strictly for myself. So that was the first indication.
Really?
I mean, the second indication was that when you look at sort of the investigation and the way it's been going, and 13 people have become government witnesses and have reached immunity agreements with prosecutors. In other words, they will not be prosecuted if they will testify truthfully. These are all associates of Scott Walker. 6 people have been charged. It's been publicly reported by the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal that one of the chief government witnesses is one of Scott Walker's best friends, who is saying that, yes, Scott Walker led the effort to stonewall the investigation. You put all of that together, and the other reporting that I have, that Scott Walker had been insisting that prosecutors, that federal prosecutors, give him a clearance letter for the last 5 or 6 weeks leading up to the recall, and he hadn't received that. So in talking to, you know, folks at the Justice Department and realizing that a long-time contact that I've had for more than 20 years in the course of covering all sorts of different investigations, whether it be Whitewater or Monica Lewinsky or Jack Abramoff or Scooter Libby or Ted Stevens, you know, as you know, you develop a lot of contacts along the way, and fortuitously for me, one of those contacts happened to have a direct knowledge of what's going on in this particular case and said, yes, he is a target. That's why they will not clear him. He and his attorneys have been notified he is a target of the investigation, which means that there's a better than 50 chance he's going to get indicted.
Now, Richard Nixon famously was on the periphery of the Watergate investigation in 1972 as he was going into November, as he was going into the election, and basically reassured everybody in America, I'm not a crook, there's nothing there, I got nothing to do with this. After he was elected, we discovered, no, he is a crook, and he did have something to do with it, and he ended up resigning. Do you think that there's a possibility that the Nixon scenario is going to be played out again if Walker is elected, that he and then he gets indicted, that we're just going to see, I mean, buyer's remorse on the part of the Wisconsin voters?
Well, I guess it'll depend in that, I mean, this case reminds me very much of a case that I covered in Arkansas in the mid-90s involving Jim Guy Tucker, who was the governor, the Democratic governor who followed Bill Clinton. And he was indicted by Whitewater prosecutor Ken Starr, along with the Clinton business partners, the McDougals. And it was the most amazing thing because Tucker didn't resign until he had gone through this exhaustive trial. And so he went into court for 3 months, every day, not saying a word to reporters or anybody else about all the stuff that was going on in the courtroom. And he had the public support until the day that he was convicted. But once he lost it with the jury, his poll numbers dropped, and that's when he was forced to resign. I have a feeling that even if Scott Walker gets indicted, and I think there's, again, a very strong chance he's going to get indicted, and you look at the sort of the case, and if you're familiar with the details here in Wisconsin, there are a lot of different sort of episodes and actions that I think they're looking at him for. But once he gets indicted, I don't think that means anything to Scott Walker. He's hired some pretty strong criminal defense attorneys, and I don't think he steps out of office until he's convicted. And the way these cases go, even if they were to indict, say, in the next couple of weeks, he wouldn't be looking at a trial for a year. So that buys him the time to continue as governor and continue to do whatever he wants as governor while he's got his defense attorneys defending him in court.
Amazing. And he can do a hell of a lot of damage in that period of time.
Yep.
David Schuster, TakeActionNews.com. Thank you, David.
Always a pleasure.
It's great talking with you, and great having, some good, solid reporting on the ground there in Wisconsin. We'll be right back with more here on the Tom Hartman Program. Check out our, by the way, new iPhone and iPad app over at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can drop into our live chat room, and you can pick up our daily blog and all the links to all the stories and all the people we talk with on the program over at TomHartman.com. Welcome back. And, you know, there's not just an election in Wisconsin going on today. The tobacco tax is a big deal in California. There are primaries in California. There are, I mean, it's a Tuesday, right? It's leading up to Election Day. And, in fact, Maria in Sacramento, California wants to talk about that. Hey, Maria, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true of you, Maria.
Everything's good here. I just am curious, what is a blue dog Democrat, and what do you think of Dianne Feinstein?
That's a good question. I don't remember the derivation of blue dog, but blue dogs are typically typically considered to be Democrats who are more conservative leaning, and the reality is that typically they're Democrats who are elected from districts that probably would have elected a moderate Republican. but there aren't any moderate Republicans anymore, so you get a conservative Democrat. And with regard to Dianne Feinstein, in my mind, she's a mixed bag in some ways. You know, her support of the military-industrial complex has always troubled me. On the other hand, she's been, you know, very strong on a variety of progressive causes. I don't live in California, so I don't pretend to be an expert on her. I've never talked with her. I've met Barbara Boxer on a number of occasions and just blown away, impressed by her. But I don't know that much about Dianne Feinstein.
Okay. Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say that I'm not very knowledgeable on my politics, but I decided I'm going to start learning about it a little bit more. And with your help, by listening to you and Ed and some of the others, it's helping me a lot. So keep up the good work. I appreciate all the information.
Great. Thanks a lot, Maria. I appreciate it. And Alan in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. What I was curious to know is that all these polls are taken with people with landlines. And so there's a whole generation of young adults out there that don't own landlines. All
right.
They have is cell phones.
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation about that, but there's a growing market in cell phone numbers. And typically the way that these things get into the marketplace, and if you have a cell phone and you've gotten spam on your cell phone, you'll understand this, is the two ways that they get in are, number one, if you go to, you know, your local pharmacy or your supermarket or your doctor's office or whatever it may be, one of these places that has the right to sell some of your personal information, and you put down your cell phone number, then they sell that and boom, telemarketers have your cell phone number. The other way is that people will pitch you, hey, do you want to make a poll? Do you want to vote in a poll? Or do you want to make an online donation? You know, donate to this charity. You can donate $2 by texting this number to yes, $2 to this number. And the people that you text the poll to or the people that you text the donation to, if they choose to, they now have your cell phone number and they can sell those. And cell phone numbers sell for a lot of money. You know, you can sell it over and over and over and over and over again for, you know, a buck a number. You know, thousands of times a year. So, and if you can get tens of thousands of numbers, you can make some serious money if you've got a good list of cell phone numbers. So, what's happened is that 2-3 years ago, it was almost impossible to buy a good, reliable list of cell phone numbers. Now it's not that hard because there are a number of people who have, you know, really made it their business to collect people's cell phone numbers that they're affiliated with. Makes sense, Alan?
Yeah, makes sense, but I'm still thinking that there's this generation that has a cell phone.
The pollsters are very, very aware of that, and they are correcting for that aggressively by paying outrageous amounts of money for cell phone numbers. And if you talk to, you know, I could just toss this out as an open question. If you own a cell phone and you've ever been called by a pollster, give us a call at 1-866-987-THOM. And I'll show you how it works, Alan. So, but that is happening. Alan, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate your listening. John, to Sirius. John, listening on TomHartman.com. You were in Madison?
Yeah, I was in Madison last week, and I spoke with some of the organizers that were getting out the early vote, and they had a rally. And, you know, one woman, it was really kind of sad. She just, you know, was so frustrated because she just didn't understand why people were voting against their own best interests. And my opinion on that is even if they lose, if they win, you know, 40% of the vote or 45% of the vote, or if they win just or if they lose just by a hair, they've accomplished quite a bit. You know,
if they get anything more than 14% of the vote, they're getting a vote that over, you know, I mean, Tom Barrett has 13% of the money in this race. So if he gets 14% of the vote or greater, he has beat money.
Yeah, and also I wanted to say, you know, it's interesting the drive back and the drive there. You could see, you know, what areas were for Walker and what areas for Barrett. And the western part of the state, which is very close to the Twin Cities here, is some of the poorest counties. They're very strongly for Walker, and you know, I don't understand that. I don't know if you have any opinion about that, why that is, but we're, you know, gradually turning, you know, from blue states into red states, and the stranglehold is within the, you know, the most populous areas. Like I live right in the heart of Minneapolis, And it's very liberal and very progressive. We have, you know, our Keith Ellison is our congressman. You know, it's just getting, you know, really interesting. And I've talked to other people like that live in Washington State. It's the same with Seattle, Tacoma, which are also twin cities. But, you know, they're just, right. It's interesting. And I don't know if you have any ideas about
I think that there are two things going on. One is with regard to all the signs that you're seeing. You know, we've had people call into this program and say that the Walker campaign is offering $100 if you've got a decent front yard to put a sign in. So some people are simply renting out. And particularly in, if you're seeing a lot of Walker signs and big, fancy, expensive Walker signs in very poor areas, the probabilities are that those people have been paid. Or, you know, that they said yes, put the sign up. The other is this interesting picture. Jesse LaGreco, who's been on this program a number of times, took this photo in Wisconsin, and they're showing it over at Daily Kos of this guy holding a sign, you know, a Walker guy holding a handmade sign, or what looks like, you know, it's designed to look like a homemade sign. And it's got in blue on the left and red on the right. It says Repubs in blue and Dems in red. And then underneath it says Repubs pro-life, Dems pro-death, right? So there's that meme. And then Repubs straight, Dems homo, it says. Repubs marriage, Dems perversion. So you know, basically they're churning the bigot vote in there. And then it says Repubs low taxes, Dems high taxes. Now, what obviously this guy doesn't know, that Barack Obama gave the middle class in America and working people in America the largest tax cut in the history of this nation. But the Democrats have been so poor at messaging that, or the national media has been so good at completely ignoring it, that, you know, people don't realize that. You know, the Republicans are about low taxes for billionaires, but not low taxes for average working people. Then underneath that, it says Republicans prosperity, Democrats poverty. Obviously, this person hasn't looked at the, you know, the history of Republican and Democratic presidential administrations. And then he says Republicans freedom, Democrats socialism. OK, so you have the freedom to have your Medicare and Social Security privatized and die like a dog if you get sick. Whereas under the Democrats, you know, we would all take care of each other. It's really pretty amazing when you, Jim grabbed the thing and he's showing it on the screen there. So, John, that, you know, it's the ability to sell the big lie, you know, combined with enormous amounts of cash that I think, you know, makes this possible. Thanks a lot for the call, John. Good to hear from you. Sandy in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Sandy, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I'm so pleased in everything that I've been able to learn from you in the probably close to a year that I've found out about you and everything.
Thank you.
So I want to thank you for that. I've got some interesting feedback to offer, and I'm not sure how it dovetails into what I've been hearing from you regarding the Texas voter rolls.
Right.
Interestingly enough, I had called prior to the local voting that took place on May 12th. Mm-hmm. Here, I live in Dallas County,
mm-hmm.
and I said, hey, I haven't received a new voter registration card, and with these, you know, picture IDs and everything, what's going on? And they said, no, that law is actually on hold. So due to the redistricting, we're late in getting out the new voter registration cards. I said,
mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And they said, well, actually, if you'd like, we'll send you some information. I said, terrific. So I've got a letter from Dallas County Board, Dallas County Elections Department, that talks about that the approval of the photo ID law has been on hold, and that regular voter registration would suffice for at least the May 12th uniform election and the May 29th primary election.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a little confused about what you've been talking about with people being denied the right to vote. Now, the second point that I wanted
the denial of the right to vote in Texas, my understanding from reading the Center for American Progress's blog over thinkprogress.org, is that it's not whether you have registered to vote or not. What they're doing is basically the same thing that they've done in the past, the same thing that they did in Florida. They're going through the list of registered voters, and they're comparing it with their list of felons and things like that, and just simply knocking people off the voting rolls or sending letters to people saying, You know, you may you come and prove that you're actually a legal resident and you can legally vote here. So, Sandy, thanks for the call. I'm sorry we're out of time. It will be right back. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Katrina Vandenhoevel has a fascinating piece in the Washington Post today. She says elections are over in a matter of hours, but movements are made of weeks, months, and years. Remember that.
Vote for me, and I'll set you free.
I love voting.
Vote, yes!
A vote is the only democratic way to decide.
Me, I have the right to vote, so I have a say. But that doesn't mean I always get my way. I'll go along with every decision that is made.
Good one, Shano. Welcome back to Talk Media for the sane among us. And our Talk Radio News Report brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. You can learn more online at germany.info. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico.
That's right. Very light turnout here as opposed to what's going on in Wisconsin, where there's very heavy turnout.
Right. In Wisconsin, you got heavy turnout. In California, you've got the whole big tobacco kerfuffle. But in New Mexico, other than Valerie Espinosa being on the ballot, which is a good thing, what else is going on with that election?
Well, it's interesting because, of course, whoever wins the race is going in the Albuquerque area, I believe that's where it's going on, is going to have to go against Heather Wilson. As you know, she ran for Senate at one point. She's a Republican Air Force Academy graduate, and now they're going to have a Democrat face her. That's going to be a very interesting election as well.
Indeed. Okay. So what's going on in the world?
Well, one other New Mexico story is the Sandia Labs here. There is a Chinese man who has not been accused of espionage, but has been accused of giving nanotechnology information to China, lying about it, and he was indicted today on 5 counts.
Wow. Okay.
So that's kind of interesting. The biggest event of the day, two big events of the day. One is besides the election, which I know you're covering, is the CBO report, the Congressional Budget Office report. They said that if they preserve the tax cuts and entitlement spending continues without any reins on it, that it will bring the gross domestic, spending by the year 2037 will be 200% of the gross domestic product. That's double what it is now.
Right. That's assuming you keep the Bush tax cuts in place.
If you keep the Bush tax cuts
right.
in place.
Right.
If you make some of the spending cuts that have been agreed on by both parties and the Bush tax cuts expired, by the year 2037, we would be at 53% of GDP, which is the lowest since World War II.
Wow.
Romney is saying that this is evidence that Obama is driving America off the cliff. Steny Hoyer says that this shows that there needs to be a balanced approach. So the Bush tax cuts, I just cannot wait for the debates, Tom Hartman, because I have a feeling that this is going to come up front and center, and the president can knock it out of the park.
Interesting. Well, let's hope so. What else?
Governor Romney has been going after the president. Today they released a web video talking about Hispanic unemployment. Romney spokesperson Andrea Saul says that the president has failed the Hispanic community with 11% unemployment, hasn't lived up to his promise. Of course, Romney says on day one, he's going to make policies that help get the economy moving for everyone, including Hispanics. Yeah, well, I have a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn.
Okay.
On that one.
All right.
The vice president today met with the Secretary of Education, Duncan. They came out with a report called Know Before You Owe. The average American now owes $26,000 in private and federal loans by the time they graduate from college. There's an 8.8% default rate in 2009. Frankly, I'm surprised it's not larger.
You can't discharge student debts by bankruptcy, so that might be why
it's
not larger.
Right.
Pardon my interrupting.
Right. And the they're trying to get people to understand the risks and benefits and clarification being necessary, sort of truth in this kind of borrowing. Senator Boxer today, along with Senator Inhofe, a bill that's called the Boxer-Inhofe Transportation Bill, delivered a handwritten proposal to John Mica. John Mica from Florida, Republican. There has been rumor that the transportation bill is in trouble. They say not, that it is not in trouble at all. Let's see what else I got for you. Paycheck Fairness Act. How did I forget about this? It went down in the Senate along party lines, 52-47.
It won in the Senate, but the Republicans succeeded in filibustering it.
That you got it. I love the way you put things. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Another Republican alternative called the End Pay Discrimination Through Information Act. That, of course, is not expected to pass either.
Right. The Constitution says all you need is a majority. That would be 50 votes, you know, plus Joe Biden breaking the tie. So 52 votes under the Constitution. It won.
I know it passed. You're right. It won.
Yeah. Except that the Republicans
voted. There was an energy conference call today. European conference call in the G20. The G20 will be meeting in just a couple weeks in Los Cabos, Mexico. What they're trying to do is trying to get all of Europe together to figure out what they're going to do about this. Also, Secretary Clinton was in the country of Georgia today. She said part of the solution from Russia and China, in Syria, is from Russia and China. And by the way, President Putin, if you want to call him that, is in Beijing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Today.
So.
So there she's trying to really hit hard on the Chinese. Don't know if she's going to be successful on that front. What else I got for you? The White House is saying that drone got the second in command for Al Qaeda. The White House is calling it a big blow for Al Qaeda. Of course, there were some other people killed in that. Believe it or not, none of the reporters asked about the collaborative damage, as it said.
Collateral damage, yeah. Was there collateral damage?
I believe there were up to 16 people killed, yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, my. This is the thing. I'm very concerned that we are going to win the battle and lose the war this way.
I can't agree with you more.
Yeah. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
This Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the German Embassy. You can learn more online at germany.info. Up next, Dr. Robert Lechter about labor rights.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here with you, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Dr. Robert Lechter is with us, the political economist, writer, activist, writes for the L.A. Progressive, laprogressive.com. Dr. Lechter, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Thanks for joining us. Now, first of all, just a little backstory. I wanted to talk about this piece you wrote, Labor Rights, It's Personal, and what the consequences are of the Wisconsin vote for the labor vote. But you're also somewhat famous for something that happened in 2010. You showed up at a Tea Party rally. Tell me about that. In fact, you were on our program at the time.
You interviewed me for it. Thank
yes.
you.
Uh-huh.
I showed up at a Tea Party rally and sat down, and I became quite an issue. People dumped on me and abused me. And
because you have Parkinson's and you speak
right.
this
and
way,
you can hear it in my voice. I'm putting out for you though, because I really want to be heard.
Well, I appreciate that, but the Tea Partiers, they didn't figure that you should get any government health care. That was the bottom line.
They wanted to throw dollars at me.
Yeah, that's
they call that health care.
That's bizarre. So in your Dr. Lechter, you have been writing about labor for years and years. You tell the story of your grandfather, an immigrant to this country, What is at stake in the Wisconsin election, in your opinion, with regard to labor?
Well, that's a good question. My thoughts are that it's the matter of what do you go to work for, and who do you go to work for, and who do you govern for? Is the purpose of life money, or is it people, and is it being decent, or is like selfishness a family value all of a sudden?
Right. And that seems to be the cleavage. You talk about your grandfather. Tell us that story.
Oh, well, I brought this picture. Maybe you can see it behind me.
Uh-huh.
And that's where it starts from. That's a 60-year-old picture that I just got recently.
Uh-huh.
They're putting it up in front. Yeah.
Yeah, there
okay.
we go.
Now, anyway, my grandfather is walking with 60-year-old, or I don't know how, anyway, I was 3 years old.
Uh-huh.
And he was walking home from work, and he's holding his right hand and my left hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of the letter, of the article, is that his left hand couldn't have done that because he had a bad encounter with an industrial accident.
Right.
With a cement mixer.
And in fact, it had chopped off all the fingers of his left hand.
In fact, my mother, I asked her recently, I never knew him with his fingers on his left hand. Mm-hmm. And it turns out she didn't either.
Hmm. So this happened when he was a young man.
Early in the century.
Yeah. Remarkable. So
yes.
this is, in your mind, this kind of situation where there are no protections for labor, there is no OSHA, which Mitt Romney and many of the Republicans have talked about. Well, yeah, you know, let's do away with a bunch of government regulations and bureaucrats and like the Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
Like your grandfather doesn't work for those kinds of places where they can worry about it.
Right, exactly.
And it really upsets me.
Yeah, and me too. I absolutely agree with you. Dr. Robert Letcher, thank you for the writing that you're doing over at the LA Progressive and for coming on our program and sharing your story with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
I very much appreciate it. It's great speaking with you. You can read Dr. Robert Letcher's piece over. It's titled Labor Rights, It's Personal, over at laprogressive.com. And it is personal and it is real. Thank you, sir. Mike in Stratford, Virginia. It says you disagree with me,
Tom.
Mike. What's on? What's up?
Quick question on collective bargaining. If 10 companies get together and collectively set the price of their products, that's called collusion or price rigging, and that's illegal. But if 10 employees or electricians on a sheet metal floor get together and set the price of labor collectively, that's a protected right.
You're comparing elephants to ants. If 10 executives within a company get together and decide what they're going to pay the workers in that company, and 10 workers in the company get together and say, no, we're forming a union, we're going to bargain with you, now you're talking apples to apples. Your metaphor is wrong. Your metaphor is nonsense, in fact.
Why is it nonsense? Why can't we have competition for what?
Because those 10 companies probably might represent a million employees, or might represent, you know, 1,000 different executives. And the 10 employees in one of those companies, you're making a false equivalence.
But if the 10 companies can set the price of their products collectively higher, can't they hire people and pay their workers more?
No.
Why not?
What you're trying to say is that having organizations collude, commit a crime, basically, fix prices, is somehow the same thing as employees getting together and saying, here's the price for which we'll work. And it's a false equivalence. It's nonsense.
You don't think the different unions collude between one another?
No. Even if they publicly spoke, Mike, what do you dislike about working people? Or are you an employee of the Koch brothers?
No, I'm not an employee, but what I'm saying is if you work at a steel mill...
What do you do for a living, Mike?
Teamster, I work in business development.
Where?
I work around... What's that?
What do you do?
I work with companies that build various products with some union and non-union shops. And I just tell you, the rules are dramatically different at the two. But, like, when you have Teamster truck drivers that won't pick up non-union steel or non-union forklift drivers can't load Teamster trucks and all of this ridiculous stuff, that's definitely collusion between the unions.
No, that is working people saying, we want you to respect our right to be working people. You know, if you look at the countries, if you look at Germany or Sweden or look at the companies where you have 80-90% unionization, you don't have this kind of conflict. But here in the United States, we've had this steady war against working people that has been going on for over 200 years, over 150 years. I mean, since back in, you know, Abraham Lincoln was the first president to use the word strike in public. And during this period of time, you've had workers saying, you know, we would like to have some rights. We would like to participate in the workplace. We would like to have an equal playing field, a level playing field with the people who have all the money. Just because somebody has all the money, you know, shouldn't mean that they have all the power. The guys who are starting the business, if somebody is coming in and they're making things, if they're making something happen, they're part of that product too, and they should have a right to say, you know, I'm doing this and I deserve a decent wage for it. And I find it just a bizarre. I don't know the word beyond that. Bizarre that anybody would say that working people should have no rights. You know, obviously in a smaller company where you actually know the people that you're working with, it's probably, you know, not as, you don't so much need a union, but in a large company where you don't even, I mean, the managers could be in a different state or in a different country, how could you possibly have any power in the workplace? And if you don't have any power in the workplace, how can you possibly have a decent standard of living? This is what we're looking at in the United States right now, with the average income in the United States, the median income at $26,500 a year. You could try to raise a family on $26,500 a year. You can't do it. People who work at Walmart can't live if they bought everything at Walmart. You just can't do it. And it was not that way in the United States 40 years ago, before Reagan, when, you know, more than a third of the American workforce was unionized and people had decent jobs. So, and particularly in the industrial workplace, what we have seen is the kind of logic that caller was putting forward, that the kind of logic that is promoted by the billionaires and the corporations, is destroying this country. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your calls right after this, 866-987-THOM. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And some of these conversations are fascinating. Now, Bill in Fulton, Missouri. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Good to talk to you. I'm in my car out here. I'm just going home. Mm-hmm. I'm a unionized airline pilot.
Uh-huh.
And it seems most airline pilots tend to be the conservatives, it seems like. But I just don't understand why people don't see that if conservatives can go after, you know, government unionized workers, what's going to stop them from coming after us? You know, our unionized labor force now is, I think it's in the 20% range.
No, it's 7.5% in the private sector.
Before Reagan, it was 27% or something like that before Reagan?
It was, yeah. It was the neighborhood of 30%
when Reagan. It's in the single digits, you know, and they keep winnowing away at it. And my point is there any legislation pending now that they're going to start coming after regular unionized employees and not just government employees?
We
always vote against our best interests as pilots, it seems like. We're always voting in people that do exactly the opposite. They're not union, you know, they're not pro-union. We're voting in people who are conservatives a lot of times. That seems to be the general voting record of a pilot union, you know, pilots
right.
in general. And I don't understand it. I thought maybe you had a comment on that. About, you know, what any legislation, right?
I think that, you know, my experience has been that people have this kind of sense of tribe. And, you know, this is my affiliation, and I think that this is just human nature. We tend to filter out the stuff we don't want to believe or we don't want to know about, and we tend to embrace and over-embrace the things that we do want to believe, even if they're just a slender reed to hang on to. And on both sides, frankly, on both sides.
And our union tells us constantly we're effectively at 1993 wages right now because of pay cuts and the economy somewhat, but mostly because of, you know, our own inaction, not our action.
Sure, and you can track this back to the Reagan administration. Ronald Reagan was the first president since the National Labor Relations Board was created in 1935 to put a person in charge of it who was actively and aggressively hostile to labor. It had always been the one place that labor could turn when capital, you know, basically tried to screw them. And so, Bill, beyond that observation, I don't have an easy answer for you other than that, billionaires have spent a lot of money and there are a lot of, you know, phony baloney books out there and whatnot suggesting that promoting these conservative points of view. And there's this whole spectrum of them. They're very, very well funded. And it's a tough one to go up against.
I know. I'm wishing everyone in Wisconsin on the left just the best of luck today.
So. You betcha. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Richard in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Oh, hi. Just thinking, Swift Boats talking about bad books, by the way. You've said a bunch of things. Hey, let me defend Mayor Daley, by the way. They say he stole the election. They should go to DuPage County and watch the Republicans go to work.
Yeah, well, and in 1960, that claim has been made by Republicans that Nixon lost because of Daley in Chicago in 1960. It has been well investigated, and it ain't true.
Yeah, here's what happened. You're exactly right, I believe, in that they said that the guy that was even more important that he wanted to defeat was the attorney, the state's attorney, and the vote was nowhere near. If he had turned out an election, he would have turned out to save that, and it went the other way. So, it's just this mythology. The reason I was calling because I'm wondering, too, why people vote against this, just like the prior speaker and the airline pilot. And, to me, I think it may come down to envy. 30 years of Reagan, anti-union, and a lot of criminality in unions as well. But I think people are hurting, and it's just scapegoating. It's like the next immigrant group coming in is opposed by the prior one.
Yeah,
I think there's a certain amount of human nature.
That's what I said. There's this kind of tribal dimension to it that, this is my tribe, that's their tribe. And what Republicans have succeeded in doing is branding their tribe as being the tribe that was pro-military, which is ironic because Democrats fought World War One and won World War One and World War Two. But the Republicans try to promote themselves as the pro-military guys. They're really pro-military contractors, big spending projects, but, not so much for the troops. George W. Bush actually, dialed back on what was being given to the troops compared to what President Obama has done and what Bill Clinton did. It's just this kind of bizarre alter reality,
it's kind of also the same thing that they say that we do against the rich. We envy them, It's the same sort of argument that they make against us.
I frankly have no envy about the rich. I just don't want anybody, whether it's a billionaire or whether it's the country of Iran, to be able to influence my elections in ways that are disproportionate to the populace. I think one man, one vote should also be, one man, one influence. And most countries have a way of regulating this. We don't. The Supreme Court here has pulled out all the stops. Richard, thank you for the call. Dave in Marshalltown, Iowa. Hey, Dave, what's up?
I got two questions. One is about when these states trying to purge these voters, wouldn't that eliminate their representative to the U.S. Congress?
No, because the representatives to the U.S. Congress are based on population, not registered to vote population, but simply adult population.
Well, I figured that you said something in the Constitution that some of these states, when they were forming, that if they have a certain population, a representative would be representing them.
Yes.
And if they eliminate these people from voting, wouldn't they lose their representative? They would have less representatives from that state going to U.S. Congress?
Yes. It was either the 14th Amendment. Yeah, here we are. It's Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians. But when the right to vote at any election for the choice of electors for president of the United States, blah, 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 is denied to any of the male inhabitants of such a state, being over 21 and citizens of the United States, except for petition, the basis of the representation therein shall be reduced in proportion. So basically what it says is that if you deny people the right to vote, now this was targeted at states that were denying African Americans the right to vote. So if you deny people the right to vote, then you can lose your representation.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Well, what these states are suggesting is that purging the voting rolls is not denying people their right to vote. That's the crux of the whole argument. That's why it needs to be litigated. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very vortiginously ugly. The good. The Walt Disney Company. Disney, the owner of the ABC network, ESPN, and various other channels, will stop airing some junk food ads on their TV shows, radio programs, and websites aimed at children. The company will cut advertising for foods that fail to meet minimum nutrition requirements. This move by Disney comes just days after New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg announced his plan to ban large sugary drinks in his city. Disney CEO Bob Iger and First Lady Michelle Obama formally announced the plan earlier today. Almost one-third of children in the U.S. are overweight or obese. Kudos to Disney for doing their part to stop the spread of this epidemic. The bad. Verizon Communications. Verizon, America's largest wireless service provider, announced plans to cut 1,700 jobs, either through buyouts or involuntary layoffs. So the company must be hurting, right? Wrong. Last year, Verizon paid CEO Lowell McAdam more than $22.5 million and has paid its top five executives more than $350 million just to five people over the last 5 years. 2008 and 2009, Verizon eliminated 26,000 jobs, cut another 10,000 jobs in 2010, and Verizon has been fighting with its unionized workers, asking for many concessions. So while the company can magically afford to pay millions to a handful of employees, everyone else is screwed. Sadly, this is all too common in corporate America today. And the very, very ugly, the North Carolina Judicial Commission. In North Carolina, it's not enough to just buy off politicians. You have to buy off the judicial branch as well. At least that's the thinking behind the North Carolina Judicial Commission, a new super PAC backed by millionaire conservatives. The group is aiming to raise unlimited amounts of money from pro-life business donors in order to re-elect North Carolina State Supreme Court Justice Paul Newby. Newby has a history of standing up for corporate America, so it's not a surprise the corporations want him to stay right where he is. Judges are supposed to make their decisions impartially without the influence of money and politics, but it appears Justice Newby has been bought off by corporate America and will no longer look out for you or me. And that is very, very ugly. Amazing. This from a local radio, Madison, Amy Berlow, a local radio reporter in Wisconsin, says, Madison City Clerk tells me turnout is on pace to hit 119% in Madison. This is the top of the Daily Kos right now. That's amazing. More people, Amy Berlow says, more people will vote today than were registered heading into the election. Now, of course, all the wing nuts are going to start going, oh, it's got to be a conspiracy, especially if Scott Walker wins. It's got to be a conspiracy. Look at that. More people voting than are registered. Well, in Wisconsin, you can register and vote on the same day. And that's so what we're showing is spectacular numbers. I mean, just incredible numbers. People showing up at the polls, registering to vote, and then voting. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, and Carol in Charlestown, New Hampshire. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, you know, the problem is that the Democrats don't get their message. They have all the facts, and they cower to the Republicans. And you know what?
Sometimes. Sometimes not. But, you know, every single day in this town here in Washington, D.C., there are Democrats holding press conferences. Today, for example, Harry Reid took on Mitt Romney. The problem is the corporate media doesn't cover it. If you look at what's going on with the Sunday morning shows, I mean, this has been so well documented. Back when George Bush was president, they were, you know, it was a preponderance, 60-70% Republicans on the, you know, Meet the Press kind of shows. And when the networks were called out about this, they said, well, you've got a Republican administration, so of course they're the movers and shakers, so we have to feature them. Then you get a Democratic administration, Democratic House, democratically controlled Senate, and it's still 60% Republicans showing up on Meet the Press and Face the Nation, all these shows. And then they say, then the networks say, well, they're the opposition. They're the minority voices, so we need to pay attention to them. So you can't win for losing. Basically, what you have is a corporate media that is in the bag with the big corporations, which is who the Republicans represent. So it's not so much that the Democrats are not standing up and fighting back. It's that when they do, they get ignored by the press.
But you know, since Reagan, with the help of the religious right, the people have been lulled in believing that the Republicans have all the answers. And like, my father was born in 1914, and my father loved Roosevelt, and I know all about, he lived through the Depression, what it was like before. And it's like you said, when the last generations die out, like the old saying, lest we forget.
Yes.
The Democrats gave us, the strong unions, the middle class, Social Security, disability, all these things that made, you know, good living for the regular people, they've been slowly, since Reagan, trying to take it away, and it's like putting a frog in a pot. It's working, because I heard one Republican operative, she says, we've been telling all the young people Social Security is going to be gone. You won't have it. And, you know, they've got young people believing all that junk.
I know. And not only that, young people don't realize that Social Security is a multimillion-dollar insurance policy for a 20-year-old. If that 20-year-old injures themselves and is no longer able to work, if they break their back and they're paralyzed, Social Security will take care of them for the rest of their lives. And, you know, that's fully a third of Social Security payments. And nobody ever talks about that because, the press doesn't like to talk about that. And Pete Peterson has spent almost $500 million over the last decade or so promoting all these various right-wing think tanks, to the point where he can actually have a meeting here in Washington, D.C. 2 weeks ago and have incredible people like Bill Clinton show up. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It is just mind-boggling. Carol, thank you for pointing that out, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Jay in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Jay, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, I'm doing good out here. Hey, a couple callers back, a guy was talking about business practices, talking about businesses colluding, like if all the phone companies got together and they collectively...
I'm trying to equate that with a union, yes.
Yeah, he was conflating that, and I had two thoughts. The one was that would basically represent a monopoly, would it not?
It would represent a trust under the old definition under the Sherman Act. You know, a trust was where independent corporations got together and acted as one. Yes.
Well, you're breaking one of the fundamental rules of how capitalism is supposed to work.
Yes.
Whereas I don't believe that capitalism has any rules against people standing up for their rights, but it does seem, I was just thinking about the election today, that the struggle is represented in the fact that we're either going to hand the power over to corporations and have them represent us, well, as the caller was suggesting, you know, they'll decide the price, and or it's going to be up to the workers and the citizens, and we're going to have to decide for ourselves. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And since the Reagan administration, we've been increasingly deciding to leave it up to the corporations and the big transnationals. Excellent point. Thank you for the call. Trey in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Trey, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? I was just listening to what you were saying earlier about the unions, and I just have a question. You know, obviously throughout history, especially like since the Industrial Revolution, you know, like there's always been a labor force or workforce that's been available, you know, pretty much to, you know, carry out work and stuff like that. And the only thing I have a question about is, like, since we're moving away pretty much from, like, a service economy, like a manufacturing economy, I mean, aren't the unions kind of obsolete? I'm not sure if you're familiar with the television program The Wire, but one of the seasons focused on the union, and it was trying to make sure that they were preserving the jobs for the workers. But one of the problems that I kind of saw was that, you know, they were kind of like wanting to keep these jobs for workers, and, you know, it was very, like, you know, it was for a high-risk occupation, like doing dock work and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to phase out in favor of using technology because it reduced workplace accidents and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, with unions, I mean, I understand, I mean, it's you know, it's necessary to preserve, you know, the right.
Let me put it in context for you, Trey. And this is just a very, very simple concept. In the 1950s in the United States, in the 1960s and the 1970s, through most of that period, there were more people in the United States, there were more companies in the United States that wanted to hire people than there were good people for those jobs. There was basically a labor shortage. And the way that we kept that labor shortage going is we said to employers, we said to businesses, we said to entrepreneurs, if you make your products in the United States, then you're going to get certain benefits, you're going to get certain tax breaks, you're going to get, you know, all the benefits of being a corporation, and you know, you have to pay your employees a decent wage. And the simple fact was that when Reagan came into office and about 30%, 28% of the American workforce was unionized, over 50% of the American workforce was earning the equivalent of union wages. So you didn't even have to be a member of a union. And the reason why is because there was competition among employers for workers. Then this whole idea of international free trade came along. And Ross Perot, in the election of 1992, came out and said, you know, if you guys do that, you're going to hear a giant sucking sound of the South. You're going to see millions of jobs leave the United States. And he was absolutely right. Just in the last 10 years, just on, you know, during the Bush administration and the first couple of years of the Obama administration, and this is something, well, let me finish that sentence. Over 60,000 factories have closed in the United States. Just in the last 10 years, we've lost hundreds of thousands of factories since Reagan came into office with this idea of unlimited, you know, unfettered free trade. Let the corporations basically dilute the labor pool by bringing in laborers in low-wage nations and cheap-wage nations. If we need to change that, and then we can have a discussion about, you know, labor and what we should be paying people and whether they should be unionized or not, and technology won't be an issue. But it's our trade policies that are driving this whole thing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And that's why we need to stop this insanity of global free trade and say, sorry, if you make it over offshore, you're going to have to pay a tax, a tariff when you bring it in.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
One can hope. Alex in Denver, listening on AM 760. Hey, Alex, what's up?
Hey, Tom, good to talk to you.
Thank you for the call.
About half an hour ago, you had a caller who was clearly anti-union, and you said it was really bizarre. And I agree with you. I want to tell you that I'm now retired, but I was chief operating officer of a large manufacturing company. We had 7 plants around the United States. 3 of them were unionized. And our unionized factories were by far the most productive, the most profitable of all of the ones that we had.
It's not an unusual story, and in fact, that's the story of Europe.
Well, and then the business was sold to an investment group, and the first thing they tried to do was bust the unions.
Mm.
Now, if these people were smart businessmen instead of the financial masturbators they were, they would have insisted on bringing in unions in the other 4 factories.
Right. Yeah, because it works for them. But really what they were looking at is those pension funds and those benefits, and thinking, hey, we could redirect that money to ourselves. This is how Mitt Romney became worth $250 million, and he put $100 million into a trust fund for his sons.
Well, you know, it was very much the Mitt Romney story. They stripped the company, and then they put it into bankruptcy, and 900 jobs out the window, but they left much richer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an old story. It's a tragic story. Thank you very much for sharing it with us, Alex, and good point. Jim in Wilmington, Delaware. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for everything that you do. You made me a lot smarter. Hey, remember the elections secretary Kathy Nicholas in the Waukesha County that...
yeah, she recently resigned.
Oh, no.
She didn't?
Anecdotal evidence suggests she's still working there.
Oh, really?
Last night, the local Fox News channel reported that a concerned group of citizens contacted the county manager to get a restraining order against her to prevent her from having any involvement in this.
Oh,
his response was, I'm not available for comment.
Huh. Amazing.
Looks like she's still hanging around, and we're going to see more like open ballot bags and rips and crap going on.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to check in with John Nichols on that one tomorrow. Thanks for the heads up on that, Jim. Dominic in Albany, New York. Hey, Dominic, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? First, I agree 100% with the fact that until we get back to this free trade issue, things are not going to turn around here. We're in a huge jam here.
Yeah.
But I want to.
Well, and if I could add something before you go on with that, Dominic, and
sure.
I will turn it back to you. 2 years ago, the Democrats in the House of Representatives passed a very important piece of legislation, which said basically, to corporate America, if you're going to continue to send jobs offshore, we're no longer going to give you tax breaks to do that. Right now, if a company shuts down a factory in Ohio, breaks that factory down brick by brick, ships the bricks and the machines off to Vietnam, reassembles it in Vietnam, and then hires a Vietnamese workforce at a dollar a day, they actually can take a tax deduction for every step of that process. You and I pay for all of it. We pay all of it. And then the company makes the profit from having a workforce that'll work for a dollar a day rather than, you know, 15 bucks an hour. And so Nancy Pelosi is, you know, leading the House of Representatives, the Democrats, passed a law saying, A, no longer can you have that tax break. We're not going to subsidize you shipping factories overseas. And B, if you bring that factory back to the United States, and keep in mind, we've lost 60,000 factories just in the last 10 years, quarter million factories since Reagan. If you bring those factories back to the United States, we will give you a tax break for bringing it back. And that bill was filibustered by the Republicans in the United States Senate because they do not want there to be more jobs in the United States while there is a Democrat in the White House. They are running on you watch the press conference from 2 days ago when John Boehner came out and Eric Cantor came out talking about the bad jobs numbers. They were cracking grins while they were saying, oh, terrible job numbers, you know, and it was all they could do to keep from laughing. They're bragging about the damage they've done to this economy. Back to you.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thanks. And I agree with you. And it was one of the smartest moves we made. I mean, we saw it happen with NAFTA under Clinton, who, you know, it was a horrible thing. I mean, we shipped those jobs overseas. Now, if we don't come back to nationalism and take care of our own backyard, but you made a really awesome point, and that is this. We no longer have a government for the people, I don't believe. We're looking at a government that really is self-serving. They're willing to watch the country go down the tubes for the sake of the other party not being in.
Yeah.
Having
well,
said that, I just got on. I listen to a lot of different radio, both on the left and on the right. And the only thing that I ask is that, truth in advertising, honesty, and so. We need to get back to what the issues really are. We could solve this problem if they would go back to working together, and they're not. We're in a lot of trouble here until we get back to this nationalism and stopping the scapegoating and all the nonsense that's going on. And that's on both sides of the aisle. And one last comment.
It's on both sides of the aisle, but I'll tell you that is a false equivalence in the media constantly. The Republicans are doing this aggressively. The Democrats are not. The Democrats are not filibustering things. The Republican, for political purposes, the Republicans are. It's just that simple.
Yeah, filibustering, you're absolutely right. But a quick example, I got on moveon.org, which is a far left-leaning, and I was looking at it. I wanted to see what some of the issues were, and one of the top headlines was, but the difference between Obama and Romney, and in the ad, it shows.
Dominic, I'm sorry, we are just flat out of time. I'm genuinely not trying to censor you, but when the machine starts, I got to stop. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a wrap up of the Wisconsin recall election outcome, what happened in California, what happened in New Mexico. Plus, we'll be talking with Lamar Waldron, as he reveals Watergate, the hidden history, Nixon, the Mafia, and the CIA. Brilliant new book. And the best of the rest of the news and your calls. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.